at full speed. When you arrive, we will prepare a welcome for the humans that'll end their threat once and for all."
Crotta's tone softened slightly.
"I look forward to seeing you at the palace, niece. Remember your vow and continue to perform at the highest levels, as you have been."
The missive fell silent, and she stood for several more moments awaiting a potential resumption. Finally, the screen followed the sound into nothingness. She activated a communication line to the bridge and passed on the new orders to her first. She finished her day with a quick scalding shower, hoping the pain would push all doubts and worries away. When it failed to do so, Indraut fell into a fitful sleep. The rest cleared her mind, and she woke to a clear sense of purpose. She dressed in her uniform pants and undershirt, then summoned her religious officer to her quarters. He arrived moments later, slightly breathless. She smiled at the image of him running through the ship's corridors in response to her call. She motioned him to a seat at the small table and handed him one of the two cups of tisane a subordinate had delivered. He looked up at her with a question in his eyes. She shook her head and said softly,
"It's clean. I tested it."
He nodded and drank. Indraut sat across from him.
"Deacon Ranja, I'm going to make a difficult request of you. In part, it's related to the irritating necessity that requires us to check our food and drink for sabotage."
She paused and took a pointed sip of her tisane.
"On earlier occasions, I've asked you to use your special systems access to communicate with religious officers on other ships in the fleet."
He nodded.
"The situation is now such that I must ask for further revelations that are traditionally within the sole purview of the church."
A small glimmer of fear or concern appeared in his eyes.
"Put in the simplest terms, Ranja, I believe there's someone working against this ship's best interest on board. I need to know if you have deeper access to the ship's systems than were revealed to me."
He took a delaying sip, but failed to still a slight tremble in the hand gripping the cup. She pretended not to notice, affording him the illusion of privacy in which to make this difficult decision. Ranja sighed.
"You're as insightful as always, Fleet Captain. I do possess accesses of which you're unaware."
Indraut nodded.
"I have not a single doubt that you used them only when vital to the performance of your duties, and that your interests have ever been aligned with my own."
She laughed, surprising them both.
"Except maybe in those first few rocky days of this posting."
He chuckled as well, remembering their fractious beginning, and some tension dissipated. His muscles relaxed back to their normal state as he took another bracing sip of the tisane.
"I must ask you to use those accesses for our mutual benefit, to discover if my concern about a rogue operative on the ship is correct."
"Of course, Fleet Captain."
She slid her tablet across to him and stood to seal the room into secure mode again. She pulled her chair around the table to sit next to him and watched while he worked. His codes let him into every one of the ship's systems, and she gave a low whistle. She had similar access, but only to the front data, which, she feared, her first was manipulating in an effort to hide contacts with others off the ship. The religious officer had the keys to the raw, unfiltered records and appeared to understand his way around them.
"There is nothing overt in the system. At least I don't think there is, Fleet Captain. No unauthorized access to the equipment in your quarters. No obvious manipulations of the ship's systems."
"That's reassuring," she replied. "Where else can you look?"
"A more skilled technician could no doubt backtrace the movements of the crew members. However, I am not that person. I do have a bit of proficiency in..."
He'd been entering commands all the while and hit a final button with a flourish.
Aha! There have been transmissions from the ship that bypassed its systems.
Anger roared through her, and she forced her voice to remain conversational.
How do you know?
The sensors picked them up as part of our routine scans. As the data didn't match any of the programmed alert conditions, no action was taken.
That seems like an oversight, she said.
It isn't, Fleet Captain. Were the sensors set to record stray signals from within the ship, it would also hinder the ability of the religious officers to do their work.
Indraat mulled that statement for a moment, then raised an eyebrow at him. He shrugged, and she read no apology in the gesture.
Can we identify what messages were sent?
Ranja shook his head, making the tightly bound club of feathers at the base of his neck bob.
All that's recorded are the times and durations of the signals.
Truly?
Truly, I swear it.
She nodded.
Okay, then. Are you able to set the system to search for similar occurrences? Upon detection, it should alert us and also identify the position of each crew member.
He frowned and went back to entering commands without answering. Several moments later, he looked up and said,
It is done.
Now, once it happens again, we'll have more information to figure out what's going on.
Yes, Fleet Captain.
He shut down the display and twisted toward her.
Do you believe this is traitorous activity?
Indraat paused and thought about it, then shook her head.
No Zhou-Xin would conspire with the humans. Whatever political maneuvering is at hand, I imagine it is entirely internal. What are your thoughts on the matter?
Your perspective is persuasive. I also cannot see a situation where one of our people would intervene on behalf of our enemy, which leaves the question of their purpose still unanswered.
It's no secret. My uncle made enemies during his rise to Hierarch and Marshal and finally to Emperor. No doubt some feel he's overreached and that he uses the pretext of divine support as a means to end of political power consolidation.
Deacon Ranja blinked in shock or surprise at hearing this argument from her.
Are these your feelings as well, Fleet Captain?
He asked with exquisite care. Indraat sighed and paced the tiny open space in her quarters.
That's a hard question, Ranja. To think our leaders could engage in a betrayal so extreme is virtually unthinkable. The idea that a member of my family could do so seems impossible each time I imagine it.
She realized she tensed all of her muscles and forced them to relax.
I believe in the righteousness of this war. I believe in the fundamental goodness of my uncle. I believe he has the interests of the gods at heart, and that the machinations of which he is no doubt accused are imaginary.
She ran her hands through the feathers atop her head, sending them billing outward, and gave them a shake. A sliver of her mind was amused at her religious officer's reaction to his captain's partially dressed and wild-coiffed display. The rest of her attention was sunk deep, searching for the truth of her beliefs.
The smallest part of me, though, refuses to remain silent. It questions the course of the war and the actions of my uncle. It wonders if the extremes to which we've gone are necessary. It wonders if our gods are truly that bloodthirsty, or if they would have been content without the wholesale slaughter of those humans not engaged in warring against us.
She dropped her arms to the side and blew out a breath.
It wonders.
He nodded, a look of understanding betraying the similar direction of his own thoughts, and the edge of pain that lay beneath it showed what the doubt cost him. When he spoke, his tone was formal and sincere.
That is the very reason I'm willing and proud to serve with you, Fleet Captain Indraat Frey. Of all the sailors and soldiers I've met, the complexity and purity of your perspective is the most consistent and the most thoughtful.
She raised her head to meet his eyes.
Thank you, Ranja.
He nodded to acknowledge her thanks.
If there is a traitor aboard ship, why not simply kill you, rather than engaging in these subterfuges? Certainly there have been opportunities.
She stalked back to her chair, pulled it to its resting position across the table from the religious officer, and sat.
An entirely valid question. At the first level, I am almost always on my guard, so perhaps an appropriate opportunity hasn't arisen. Another possibility is that an attempt has been made, such as on the planet where the Domeki vessel was hidden, but failed. I don't give these any particular credence, however. I'm confident I'd sense it if someone had tried.
She leaned on her elbows, narrowing the distance between them.
What I think, what I fear, is that there are much larger wheels in motion. Our lurker is a cog in a machine we cannot yet see the outlines of, and the goal of which we cannot yet perceive. If this is the case, there's no telling what may transpire as the events of this war draw to a close.
You believe it will end soon, Fleet Captain?
Indrat leaned back with a sly smile.
Of course, Deacon. The end of the cycle is nigh. If we are to fulfill the promises and demands of the gods, it must end in the next few months. Isn't that so?
He offered an uncertain smile in response.
It is so.
She leaned forward again, even closer this time, and her voice was barely above a whisper.
It stands to reason that whatever our lurker is up to, it must reach its climax by then. The only question that remains is whether it will be in support of that goal which will provide the Emperor with a great victory, or against that goal, which could result in any number of ugly outcomes for the Zhoshin people.
I'll admit to being afraid of the latter outcome, Fleet Captain.
I as well, Deacon. However, I know my uncle better than most, just as there are wheels within wheels that turn toward the unwelcome surprise he plans for the humans. It may be that there are additional wheels at play to block or capitalize upon whatever subterfuge is at hand.
The possibilities seem endless. I don't know how you keep them all straight.
A snort escaped her.
It is shockingly simple, Deacon Ranja. Always assume there is an additional layer beneath the one that you can see.
And once you uncover that lower layer,
another layer, of course. Layers upon layers upon layers, my friend. Layers all the way down.
Chapter 17. The marine transport ship was all hard edges and sharp corners. Even the conference room had a feel of hardness about it, despite the comfortable chairs around the rectangular table. Seated in them were some of Cross's favorite people, and a couple he didn't know well yet.
"Thank you all for coming," Rhys St. John said. "Commandant Tomos has some interesting ideas she'd like to share with you."
Saradwyn Tomos was an almost legendary figure in the UAL Navy. Her ability to cut with her wit was second only to her ability to do so in combat, despite her relatively diminutive size compared to the others at the table. Rumor had it she had so many medals that they no longer fit on her uniform. Her voice was amused as she said,
"Well, one interesting idea, at least."
She called up an image of a Zhoshin vessel on a huge display mounted along the long wall. Janik, seated across from Cross, had to twist to see it, but let out a whistle when he did.
"That's a nice ship."
The Marine Commandant nodded.
"It is a very nice ship. And, fortunately, one we've not had to face too often. It's the bird's version of our carrier, but it's half again the size and, by our estimates from the battle at Earth, brings almost double the number of fighters."
"It's impressive that the Beijing did so well against the carrier that ran the attacks against the planet," Kate said. Murmurs of agreement sounded around the table. Tomos gave her a nod.
As you might have guessed, we haven't asked you here to admire the ship, but rather to discuss a plan for it.
We'd need to bring overwhelming force, Cross began, running his words together in his desire to get them out. But really, as long as we had 4 or 5 cruisers or fewer ships and a carrier, we could...
Tomos raised a hand to cut him off, and Sinner stepped into the conversational gap.
We don't want to destroy it, she said. We want to steal it.
Silence filled the space in the wake of her proclamation until the Commandant spoke again.
As Gunnery Sergeant Murphy has said, the powers that be have arrived at the astounding conclusion that having an enemy carrier to use as a Trojan horse at the battle in the aliens' home system might be a good idea.
The statement inspired snorts and chuckles from the group.
Since the people in this room possess some experience with such activities from that other time, those same powers that be thought you'd make an excellent planning team.
Her words hung in the air, most notably the reference to her earlier foray to board an enemy vessel, a mission unapproved by anyone higher in the chain of command than Cross, and clearly a less well-kept secret than he'd imagined.
This is an outgrowth of a prior meeting among the Marines, Saint said. Our role in the assault on the Zhoshin home system has been unclear all along. We knew we'd be involved, but without a specific task have been unsure how to proceed.
Actually, we're still unsure what we'll be doing in the final battle, Sinner said.
Saint nodded.
Obviously, if we get down to the planet, we know what we're about. Otherwise, we're just passengers, I guess. Anyway, we were throwing around ideas of how to make ourselves useful in the interim, and someone suggested boarding enemy ships and taking them from within. This meeting is the logical outgrowth of that idea.
Tomos took over.
Is this something you're interested in discussing?
Affirmatives rang out, and the Commandant clapped her hands.
All right, let's get to it.
An hour later, with the debris of a light meal littering the table, the plan was coming into focus.
Okay, how about we go over it from the top?
Tomos said, waving for the separate teams to come together again at one end of the table. Once they'd rearranged themselves, Claire Martin said,
The Phoebe has identified a sector where several Zhoshin ships are gathered. Our upgraded communication and sensor equipment has allowed us to get a picture of the situation, and also to listen in on some of their conversations. It appears to be a waypoint for repairs, with between 4 and 6 ships there at any given time. A carrier is currently one of them. We are unable to ascertain whether it's damaged or just acting as a defense for the sector, but we expect it's the latter. We believe we've discovered a way to effectively jam their communications, based upon...
There was a slight hesitation.
Previous experience.
Kate took over.
The Pandora will ride the wave in with the Phoebe, and we'll engage any other ships present in hopes of getting lucky with a surprise strike. However, our main goal is to put ourselves right in front of the carrier. By now, they should know about my girl's armor and her ability to withstand a collision. We hope to limit their maneuverability by staying on their nose, aligned with their thrust vector.
Won't this leave you open to a lot of abuse from other ships?
Janik asked. Kate smiled at him.
That's where you come in,
Cross said.
The Washington will take part, of course. I'd say we need to bring at least one other cruiser and a carrier of our own, or several other cruisers in its place.
Commandant Tomos nodded.
It just so happens that we have a carrier to send. My colleagues in Fleet Command expect having fighter-to-fighter capability will be important.
Especially if there are as many fighters on board as we estimate. We have thought on that,
Saint said. He and Sinner had been huddled with Janik throughout the earlier sessions. The chief engineer threw a schematic up onto the main display from his table.
The marine scientists have outdone themselves on this one. Before you is a torpedo-deployed version of the web grenade.
Is it big enough to capture a whole ship? Cross asked, then shook his head at the stupidity of the impulsive question. Janik smiled.
Not quite, Captain. The Washington will carry the only 4 of these beasties in existence, and the goal is to fire them into the starboard and port hangars. Once one gets in there, we'll send it a signal, and the torpedo's engine cuts off, and it ejects a ton of canisters in every direction. After several seconds, those canisters deploy and spray the area with enough strings to lock it down.
He turned back from looking at the missile.
Worst case, we get 2 primary shots and then 2 backup shots if something goes awry. Best case, the first ones work. Then we follow them in for additional blockage.
I like it, Cross said. Do we think we'll be able to keep the carrier in place, though? Just with the Pandora? If things go south, the aliens might choose the ramming option over capture.
Hopefully the Phoebe can take care of that, Captain Cross, said Claire. She's currently manufacturing a weapon that should help.
He frowned, and Kate jumped in.
A while back, Pandora informed me there were additional munition types available that we didn't have on board. I shared that information with Claire, and the Phoebe confirmed she had additional schematics available. After a long conversation, Claire said, she agreed to provide me access to just one, and only because it is, in itself, non-lethal.
Cross sent a confused look at Kate, and she mouthed,
Later. In any case, Claire continued, we have a weapon we hope can knock the carrier's engines offline without damaging them. We'll be prepared to replace any components that are overly fragile, but in our estimation, there shouldn't be too much repair necessary.
If there's one thing the birds aren't, it's fragile, said Saint.
Nods and sighs were offered in response. The group spent the next hour nailing down all the operational details, sharing critiques and polishing the plan. Finally, as Cross was just beginning to lose his mind, they broke up and went their separate ways.
Somehow this cabin doesn't feel like you, Kate said, wandering around the captain's quarters on the Washington, D.C.
Cross had taken advantage of the months of repair to redecorate the space, resulting in a still comfortable but more functional aesthetic. Gone were the comfortable couches, replaced by a meeting space and a working desk. Gone, too, was the historical art Okoye had mounted on all the walls, replaced by displays that currently showed swatches of color or planetary systems.
You're obviously delirious. Let's go, he said,
and picked her up. She shrieked as he threatened to dump her over on her head, then laughed for several minutes after he threw her through the air to land on the bed in the sleeping area nearby. Cross lay down beside her and watched her while her mirth played out. She rolled over and looked at him.
It feels like we're nearing the end, doesn't it?
He nodded and replied, It does.
Things are just going to move more quickly from here.
Which is why we need to rest while we can, he said, and gathered her into his arms.
He snuggled his face into the crevice between her shoulder and her neck and inhaled her scent.
You stay safe,
she breathed at him.
You stay safe.
I will if you will.
Deal.
He forced his drooping lids open to look at her, and the silence brought her gaze to his.
I love you, Kate. I want a life together when this is over.
He pressed a quick kiss to her lips.
And I you.
She closed her eyes, but somehow Cross knew she wasn't finished speaking. Minutes later, as he was on the verge of falling asleep, she muttered,
So don't screw it up, Flyboy.
He grinned, and sleep took him. When he awoke, he reached sleepily over to her side of the bed, only to find it empty. With a groan, he levered himself up on his elbows and realized that her presence, that ambiance he always sensed when she was near, had fled.
I hate it when you do that, he complained to the empty room.
With another, louder groan, he forced himself out of bed to get to work.
Chapter 18
Here we go,
Kate announced over the ship-wide channel. She hit the buttons that would eject them from the gravity wave and deposit them in the sector the Phoebe had identified as the Zhroshin repair area. For a moment, upon reversion, it was like a perfect painting. 6 enemy vessels hung in space, 4 of them cruisers and 1 an engineering tender, according to the information Pandora streamed across her display. The remaining ship was their target. The carrier hung there like a monolith, much larger than their own version.
That's a big ship, said Claire Martin over the channel connecting the Phoebe and the Pandora. It sure is, Kate said.
Let's get to it.
While she'd been wool gathering, Diaz had been designating targets. She launched a full spread of missiles with at least a few targeted upon each of the ships in the sector. The Phoebe matched her. Kate thought she saw a slight wobble in the visual display when the active communication interference began, and moments later, Claire confirmed,
"Jamming is up. We're as certain as we can be that it's working properly."
"Affirmative."
With gentle strokes on her controls, Kate guided the Pandora to her position at the bow of the carrier.
"Hi there, birdies. How are you?"
she whispered, then sent bolts of energy to beat on the ship's forward shields. She continued to fire torpedoes at the other alien vessels, which were just starting to react to their presence.
"Keep sharp on the shields," Kate commanded.
"Aye," replied Diaz.
A glittering trail of projectiles reached out to destroy an inbound torpedo and verified he was in control of the situation. A countdown on her display reached zero, and she looked up expectantly. She was rewarded with the sight of a tunnel opening to discharge the Washington, the Los Angeles, and the Nara into the sector. The admirals and the Marines had gone back and forth on the issue and had finally come to an agreement that this was the smallest number of ships that could still pull the mission off. Admiral Silva had insisted privately to Kate and Claire, if the situation became dire, they were to flee so the precious Domecki vessels wouldn't be lost. They spoke words of agreement in order to placate their superiors. Kate thought the whole episode was illustrative of how little the Admiralty understood her.
Abandon her people? Not this day. Not any day.
The Washington curved to the starboard side of the enemy carrier and attacked the shields from that angle. The Los Angeles, another cruiser, similar in style to the DC, but a generation newer, engaged the engineering tender and quickly destroyed the underarmed and under-armored support ships. The Nara, an AAN carrier, deployed its fighters immediately, then turned its attention to the Zhroshan cruisers. The Phoebe positioned herself high to starboard of the enemy carrier at an angle that would allow her to best protect the human ships. A target designator popped up on her screen, and she launched a full broadside at it. Kate had already fired her weapons at it, and the targeted cruiser was forced to break off its attack run and flee from the missiles trailing it. The lack of mobility hurt the human forces, as the other three enemy cruisers used the Zhroshan carrier as a shield to protect their runs against the Nara. A coordinated barrage by the trio left the carrier limping, the shields along one side buckled, the armor damaged, and atmosphere venting from several pierced compartments.
"All fighters are deployed," announced Captain Hatake. "We could use a little cover, though."
The Los Angeles repositioned from supporting the Washington to assist the Nara. Right into an enemy trap. The three cruisers broke off their next run against the Nara as soon as the smaller ship entered range. They battered it with energy weapons and followed with torpedoes to finish a strike that almost brought the UAL cruiser down. The honor of the kill was given to the Zhroshan carrier, which unleashed a full broadside against the Los Angeles. More than a dozen missiles made it through the human ship's countermeasures, and it took only the first to deplete her shields. The ship split apart in all directions. One final torpedo, now targetless, passed through the space where the Los Angeles had been, unhindered, and wandered toward empty space. Kate looked down at her board with a growl, contemplating for a moment blowing up both the plan and the carrier in front of her. She lifted her head to regard the main display and saw the carrier's engine output increase and its thrusters engage.
"Oh, no you don't," she said,
and moved the Pandora in parallel to its efforts, blocking the ship from escaping the sector without going through her first. The assault plan had been well thought out, but it rested on the unacknowledged assumption the Zhroshan defenders would engage those attacking the carrier. Instead, they chose to attack the AAN carrier. The Phoebe raced to the defense of the Nara, interposing herself between him and the attacking ships, and absorbed the damage from the cruiser's lasers, plasma cannons, and torpedoes. She rolled to present unweakened defenses as the barrage reduced the power on her port surface.
"I could probably do this all day if not for the carrier," Claire said, "but I'm sure that as soon as my shields are vulnerable, the big guns will join the fight."
Kate watched the trio come about again for another attack run on either the cruiser or the Phoebe.
"Pandora, are the Zhroshan ships far enough from the carrier that we can engage?"
Even if they couldn't see the enemies, the Pandora's sensors could certainly target them and guide torpedoes past the obstruction.
No, Commander. They're staying close. While we could engage them, any large explosions might damage the vessel, which is our purpose for being here.
Damn it, Kate said, just as the Droshin carrier's starboard shields failed. Cross's shout of victory was loud in her earpiece. The Washington ejected one of the special torpedoes, which flew into the hangar and disappeared. After several breathless seconds, Cross reported,
Direct hit. None of the fighters are getting out on that side. Too bad we can't say the same about the other side, replied Captain Hatake.
Kate swept her gaze to the other half of the battle, where human fighters defended the Nara against their Droshin counterparts. The tiny ships were focused on their one-on-one battles, but every now and again a missile would fly out to strike at the Nara.
We're on our way, Cross said,
and the human ships repositioned according to plan. The Washington dove under the carrier and emerged on the far side with a flurry of cannon fire, causing one of the trio to break off. The old ship took up a position opposite the port hangar and attacked those shields. Her other broadside launched at Droshin forces whenever they drew near, and beams of destruction lashed out, chasing the enemy fighters that darted through the battle. Kate didn't need to hear it to know that Walsh was growling and swearing under his breath with each miss, and murmuring taunts at his foe, just like always. The life where she was part of the Washington's crew seemed far away indeed. The carrier tried to escape again, and again Kate interposed the Pandora. The Domeki armor made the threat real, as the large vessel could easily survive ramming most human ships without crippling itself.
Janik thinks the cruiser could be more damaged than we expected, and that's why they aren't defending it like we thought they would, Cross said.
Kate shook her head. Leave it to the Washington to be concerned about such things in the middle of a running space battle.
Maybe your Marines can give us a report on that, Captain,
she replied in a tone that suggested but wasn't quite mockery.
I'll ask them now, although since they haven't launched yet, I'm not sure they'll have much new to add. Still, I wouldn't want to reject your excellent idea out of hand, he replied.
Kate shook her head again. Cross was one of a kind. The detonation of the Nara was a shock to them all. The sensors suggested he was still safe, with shields at least half strength everywhere. However, a momentary failure or an equipment misalignment from the battering he'd taken, or some other unknown vulnerability must have occurred, because an enemy missile snuck through unimpeded and exploded against the side of an engine. As the explosion ripped through the chamber, it destroyed the failsafes that should have shut the engine down. Instead, it slipped into an uncontrolled reaction that unbalanced the ship and sent flames and thrust on unanticipated vectors. It took only a second for the other engine to implode, and the combined destruction and imbalance tore the Nara apart along its length. The stresses caused everything that could explode to do so, and shrapnel flew into the atmosphere like fireworks from the doomed carrier. One of the Droshin cruisers was in between the two cruisers, and the barrage of tiny pieces of the Nara snuck through its already weakened shields to eliminate it. Its detonation added to the destructive debris flying toward the enemy carrier. Some of the shrapnel found the carrier and assisted in dropping the port shield, but a large portion of the remains of the Nara and the enemy cruiser hit the Washington. With her defenses primarily focused against the carrier, the explosion buckled her shields. The shrapnel's kinetic and thermal energy penetrated her hull in a multitude of tiny strikes. Kate heard alarms and shouting, then Cross growled the results.
We're no longer airtight, and we've had casualties. Port broadside is offline. Probably something ripped through the power conduit or the control cables. Janik says we'll be all right for now.
The Phoebe moved into position to protect the Washington's damaged side, and kept up her assault on the pair of Droshin cruisers that remained. She fired a flight of missiles around the Washington, and they brought the carrier's port shield, which had just re-solidified, down again. Cross launched his last web torpedoes and reported success. He added,
Marine flights 1 and 2, you are clear to launch. If you can't take the enemy ship, our fighters will be stranded here if any reinforcements show. So, no pressure. But get it done.
Chapter 19.
Copy that, said Sinner. Marine Flight 1, on the way.
The pilot appropriately took her comment as a command, and the light-absorbing black cylinder left the Washington under thruster power, followed by Saint's team in Marine Flight 2. The shuttles were on loan from a marine transport ship for the operation. They were usually outfitted for atmospheric flight, but in their current mode would find any interaction with the atmosphere extremely unpleasant. The aerodynamic nose cone had been removed to reveal the breaching module that lay behind it. From the outside, the shuttle looked like a short black cigar. The interior was designed with assault in mind. The pilot's compartment was in the rear of the vehicle to avoid interference with charging Marines. There were no chairs in the troop section, and the shuttle was not much taller than the power-suited warriors that rode inside it. Grapnel secured their armor to several hardpoints to keep them in place during transit. In a window on their heads-up display, Sinner watched the feed from the Washington, which showed her ride nearing the enemy carrier. They were close enough now that if the shields reactivated, they wouldn't endanger her people.
"Grapnels!" she commanded.
10 powerful magnets arranged in a large circle and attached with new steel cables were propelled toward the other ship. They closed the gap in an instant and secured themselves to the metal of the carrier.
"Take us in,"
she ordered, and high torque motors in the shuttle winched them closer.
"Make a hole,"
she said, and a ring of thick filaments extended to touch the skin of the enemy ship. The breaching device operated like sustained plasma cord, burning at a ludicrous temperature across its surface until whatever it was in contact with yielded. In no time, a circular section of the hull fell away, and the cutter retracted.
"Release clamps,"
was the next command, and it freed the Marines to move.
"Pop the hatch,"
resulted in the four-section door at the front of the shuttle folding back upon itself to open in the least amount of space required. Finally, it was time.
"Deploy and secure perimeter,"
she said with an inward sigh of pleasure at the start of real action, and her team charged in with Jeffrey Surfer Baker and Charlotte Char Allard leading the way a step ahead of her. The rocket-assisted jump from shuttle to ship was one she'd done countless times before in both training and combat, but it was always accompanied by the thrill of fear. Fear this would be the time the other ship pulled away, and the shuttle was blown to bits behind her, leaving her spinning untethered in space until her air ran out. It was Minnie Marine's worst nightmare, and she crushed the queasiness it inspired down where it belonged. Her boots hit the deck, and she took a deep breath and cleared the area for those following. She checked the map in her display and saw their best guess at the path to the ship's control center overlaid upon it.
"Head right, toward the bow. All our data suggests they keep their bridge somewhere near where we keep ours."
A clanking and beeping caused her to turn and see that Gideon G. Wiz Wilkinson had released 2 rolling sentry bots to guard the entrance to the shuttle. She gave him a nod and waved him forward, then pointed to Hugo Huge Galano and Leslie Dish Isher, and signaled that they'd be rear guard. She said,
"Deuce, you're with me,"
and Diego Seco stepped up beside her. Pieces of the ship filled in on the map as their sensors reached out and cataloged more of the vessel. It resolved to show a blind corner ahead, and she called,
"Halt! Cover!"
Her Marines moved to the walls and took up overwatch positions, their weapons pointing in all available directions.
"Surfer, send one of our spheres to see what's around the corner."
An eye movement pattern released a small orb from a storage compartment on his calf, and it spun in place for a moment to orient itself. The metal ball rolled forward and sent audio, video, and sensor data to all the Marines' displays. The birds were waiting for them. 4 enemy soldiers knelt behind improvised blockades, what looked like tables turned on their sides, and aimed their rifles over the top. That wouldn't have been a problem. The fact that they appeared to be in powered battle armor was.
"This just got a lot more difficult,"
Sinner observed.
"Let's be optimistic for a moment and assume they've deployed defenses, but don't know exactly where we are. We need to take these folks as quickly and quietly as possible."
Professional silence greeted her words, and she nodded.
"Go,"
she said, and 4 of her people ran, slid, jumped, and dove into the corridor, their sound-suppressed rifles spitting destruction the instant they cleared the corner. 2 of the aliens fell victim to coordinated headshots, The other pair managed to spray defensive fire for a short while before the rest of the Marines could get into the fight and eliminate them.
You call that quiet?
You said quiet as possible, Gunnery Sergeant, replied Surfer. Did you want me to go sing them a lullaby?
With laughter came a lessening of stress, and she was glad for it. It was a nice counterpoint to the growing feeling that the op was on the wrong track, right from the start.
Sinner, ready for us?
Saint's tone was all business.
Negative,
she said, drawing the word out as she thought about it.
We're facing more resistance than expected. Let me get more info.
Affirmative. Time is a factor, Sin.
Shut up, Saint,
she answered. Her display revealed a side room that opened toward the center of the ship, and she ordered half her team into it, leaving the rest on overwatch in the hallway.
All right, G-Wiz said. Computer interface.
From a utility compartment at his waist, he pulled out a small disk and set it against the unit.
Is that...
One of the many sub-Pandoras. Yes, Gunnery Sergeant. It should get us access to the data we need, a lot faster than I could.
She nodded and opened a private channel with him.
Good initiative. But next time, check with me first.
Yes, Gunnery Sergeant,
the chastised voice responded.
Or I'll be forced to kick your ass off the ship. And frankly, I think we're going to need you.
He laughed, and she reconnected the comm to all her Marines.
The magic technology is doing its work. Onward.
After a minute of stealthy advance, a long corridor before them ended at a closed bulkhead door. The local version of Pandora informed them beyond it was a room without sensing equipment of any kind, so she could tell them nothing about it. They crept warily forward, and Char ran a minimal distance sensor scan of the portal.
Its reading is locked.
Of course it is, answered Sinner. They don't want to be too obvious about it. Char, plasma cord the door. Be ready to retreat. Surfer, if it opens and there are enemies shooting at us, you step forward and trigger your shield.
Her people affirmed her orders, and she returned to quietly hating the situation. The room couldn't be a better choke point if it had been designed to be one, so given their luck, it probably had been designed to be one, which meant, at the very least, there were troops on the other side.
Fire in the hole,
Char said, and scuttled away from it. Surfer took a few steps back out of respect for the wicked cutting tool. The door burned and fell into the room with a shattering clang. As expected, enemy soldiers waited within. What was unexpected was the mounted projectile weapon facing down the corridor.
Shield!
Sinner shouted, followed by,
Retreat!
She activated her own shield as she backpedaled. The scene seemed to move in slow motion as the multi-barreled weapon fired. She heard the involuntary grunts as Surfer was forced backward from the impacts against his armor. Then he toppled, and the rounds peppered the rest of the squad. She fired the emergency grapnel mounted on the outside of her right forearm, and got lucky for the first time in the mission as it latched onto her downed Marine. Soon they were back around the corner, and the incoming fire died down. Sensors in the corridor beyond showed no enemy soldiers in pursuit.
So, they aren't as interested in eliminating us right now, so much as preventing us from getting anywhere useful,
Sinner said.
That is correct,
replied the robotic version of Pandora's voice.
There are similar-looking rooms that I cannot see into, along both main access corridors to the bridge. Also, the enemy is aware of your location and is reinforcing adjacent compartments.
Saint, Sinner growled, this approach is a bust. At best, we might be useful as a decoy for your assault.
How long can you last?
He responded immediately.
If they send testing strikes, we should be fine. Right now, they seem content to wait. If that changes, though, it's going to be a fighting retreat to the shuttle.
Pandora's voice chimed in.
If you enter from a designated spot on the dorsal surface of the ship, Gunnery Sergeant St. John, I should be able to chart a concealed course to take you almost all the way to the bridge.
Got it. Send the data. Saint out.
Sinner sighed in frustration.
Pandora, what's our best path from here to the bridge? I don't think being buttoned up like this is a great strategic choice.
Stand by, Gunnery Sergeant.
After a minute of silence, the computer spoke again.
It appears the best route is up.
Sinner looked at the ceiling of the room, a meter and some change above them.
Char, time for some more plasma cord.
Moments later, it was done, and half her team was climbing into the access port they'd created. The other half was leaving surprises for any Zhroshin forces that tried to follow them. After all, there was never a good reason to bring explosives back from a mission. Chapter 20
Go! Saint commanded, and the Marines ahead of him leapt through the breaching hatch.
Unlike a typical boarding maneuver, however, there was no opening in the hull awaiting them. He imagined a god's-eye view of the operation, a string of power armor suits tethered to one another by thin cables inexplicably leaping out of a perfectly good shuttle into space.
Grapnel!
He commanded, and Pierre Paris Gerard fired a heavy magnet at the Zhroshin carrier. It latched on and reeled them in. When they were near enough, each Marine activated their magnetic boots and clamped onto the skin of the ship.
Your access point is 237 meters ahead, Gunnery Sergeant St. John,
said the metallic tones of the sub-Pandora, integrated with the ship's systems.
Affirmative, St. replied. You heard the lady. Let's get moving. Even though it would be beyond strange for there to be hazards for us here, keep your eyes open.
The team advanced, rifles pointing in all directions until they reached their target, with a final bouncing step that sent his stomach into his throat, just as every single one before it had, he locked himself into place.
The chamber below you is pressurized, Gunnery Sergeant.
Got it, thief. Deploy the bubble.
Julius Styler walked a 10-meter circle around the target point, dropping magnetic attachments at 1-meter intervals. When the circuit was complete, she retraced her steps and attached a long tube of material to connect each to the next in line.
Everyone in position, she said,
and the Marines crowded into the center. Styler reviewed their positioning and nodded. She triggered a command and the tubes unspooled flexible supports, climbing and becoming rigid as they reached full extensions. The pieces joined at the apex, and with a sizzle of electric connection, the individual pie wedges of the bubble fastened themselves together. Next, smaller strips extended from the bottom of the tubes to the hull, and those created a seal with the ship's surface.
Pressurizing,
she said. It took less than a minute for the bubble to reach full extension, the pressure within now equivalent to the pressure inside the ship, as reported by Pandora.
Make a hole,
Saint said. And Moya, Flame, Candela knelt to lay plasma cord around an opening, just large enough for the Marine's combat armor to fit through. It gave its own sizzle, and the piece of bulkhead was caught using magnets to keep it from falling inward. Case, Key, Jameson, and Isabel Easy Styler set the slab of metal aside.
Paris, you're first, then Alvi.
Saint put up a hand to hold them back and dropped one of the Marines' ubiquitous sensor balls through the gap. The chamber appeared in their heads-up displays, a simple enough room filled with a variety of cables, pipes, and other conduits. He dropped his arm, and the two Marines jumped in, one after the other. Saint's display showed them tumbling in different directions as they landed, then rolling to crouch in a cover position.
All clear,
Nieve Alvi Alvarez reported. Saint leapt in and was followed by the rest.
Where are we, Pandora?
He asked.
You're in the equipment space that feeds the starboard weapons arrays, Gunnery Sergeant.
Excellent choice.
Thank you, she replied. This route should provide minimal enemy contact for a time.
Their displays illuminated with a directional path that led them to a bulkhead at the end of the room.
Unfortunately, you'll need to create your own access ports,
Pandora apologized.
I've got that covered,
Flame said. She always welcomed an opportunity to deploy things that burned or blew up, and her voice indicated her enthusiasm for the task. Their advance was cautious, perhaps overly so, but, as promised, no enemies appeared to oppose them.
Sinner,
Saint said.
Go.
Status.
Very slow progress toward the bridge. Pandora is routing us away from known enemy choke points, but we've still had to fight our way through a couple.
Casualties.
Nothing important. Bumps and bruises, a broken bone or two. We're good.
Okay, stay safe. We're moving as fast as we can.
Affirmative. And Saint?
Yes, Sinner?
This ship sucks hard. Move faster.
He laughed and killed the channel, then moved forward at a gesture from Pierre Paris Girard. As he approached the bulkhead, Pandora provided a virtual view of the room beyond it, constructed from the various sensors she'd tapped into. It was at least two decks high, and they looked down upon a dozen or so uniformed Zhoshin operatives working at terminals. Another being, presumably an officer, marched among them, carrying a small stick that he every so often smacked into the opposite gloved hand.
"He looks like a real pleasure to serve under," Julia Styler quipped. "Not a bit like you and Center Gunnery Sergeant."
"Thief, you've just earned yourself the privilege of cleaning and re-inventorying all of our gear after this adventure."
The Marine groaned, and the rest of the squad laughed.
"Suggestions?"
Flame was quick to respond.
"Grenades. We blow up the birds in the terminal so they can't use whatever they control."
"What room is this, Pandora?"
"It's a weapons control center, Gunnery Sergeant. There are several of them throughout the ship, including one redundant to this one."
"It was a good idea, but we should probably stay quiet since destroying it won't have any additional benefit."
"I've got just the thing," said Key.
He gestured toward a bandolier of small canisters that crossed his chest. Saint kicked up the magnification in his display to get a closer look at the devices.
"Are those the new toys you and G-Wiz were talking about?"
"Affirmative. They haven't been certified as operational yet. I brought them along in case we had prisoners to test them on afterward."
"What are they?"
"Nerve gas, essentially. They should leave the birds unable to do anything with their voluntary nervous system for, our best guess anyway, at least an hour."
Saint frowned. "How sure are you?"
"Sure it will work at all, or sure it will work exactly as planned?"
"Either.
In testing, it sometimes resulted in the death of the subject. A tiny percentage were less affected than others, but of the few Zhoshin we were able to test it on, it was mostly successful."
"You fill me with confidence," Saint said in a dry voice.
"Flame, be ready with those grenades in case this doesn't work. The rest of you, be ready to blow a big hole in the wall and go loud."
He gave the gesture for get ready, and his team went to work. They used an almost silent cutter to drill a hole just large enough for the canisters. Flame outlined a larger section in plasma cord and tied in a concussion grenade that would propel the released piece down into the room. The Marines took cover from the plasma cord, then readied their weapons.
"Key, go!"
The Marine had used a thin line to connect the canisters and slid them through the hole one by one. As he released the last, he hit the trigger to activate them all. They sprayed their contents in a wide dispersion. Each canister held multiple versions of the gas, some crafted to rise, some to fall, and some to just go wherever the currents of the target space took them. The technicians and the officer jumped to their feet and turned toward the clattering canisters as they hit the floor. It took only seconds for the toxin to permeate the room, and the aliens dropped in a wave that swept outward from the impact location. A bolt of energy sizzled across the chamber and connected with the head of a technician who'd almost reached what was presumably an alarm button. Saint looked at Isabel Styler, the team's sniper, who had her weapon positioned through the hole the canisters had gone through. She gave him a raised palm shrug in return.
"Can't be too careful, Gunnery Sergeant," she said.
They took several minutes to undo the plasma cord before lowering themselves into the weapons control center.
"Status, Pandora?"
"No alarms yet, Gunnery Sergeant. I disconnected the sensor feeds from this room before you breached it."
"Well done."
"Thank you."
Saint smiled inside his helmet at the fact that he was trading niceties with an artificial intelligence that was smarter and more capable than several upper echelon officers he'd met. Key moved from alien to alien, scanning them and recording their responses to the toxin.
"No deaths, except the one Easy barbecued," he said. "Looks like it's a definite go."
"Good to know."
St. John walked over to the wall, but it didn't vanish to provide an image of the room beyond as expected.
"Pandora?"
"You've reached the end of my ability to take you in this direction. There's a wide corridor to your left. That's the fastest path to your target."
"Enemy forces?"
"None present at the moment. The area immediately surrounding the bridge is invisible to me, so I cannot guarantee their complete absence. It's slightly over 77 meters ahead.
Got it, he said, and raised his arms in a long stretch. I'm sure I speak for many of us when I say that, at this point, a stand-up gunfight seems preferable to crawling around in these tunnels.
Amen,
chorused two of his marines. He toggled his comm.
Sinner, we're getting ready to push on the bridge. Now would be an excellent time for a distraction.
Affirmative, Saint. We'll go all out and see who we can draw, but the likely result is retreat rather than advance.
Understood. Do your best, but stay safe.
Safety isn't in the job description, Gunnery Sergeant St. John.
The channel closed with a click. Saint scowled at her response. She wasn't kidding when she said she disliked being on this ship.
Prep for an assault on the bridge. Assume we'll face heavy weapons and guards, and that we'll have to cut through some serious armor.
He activated his own diagnostics and checked to make sure all his gear was where it should be. His marines busied themselves, selecting appropriate ammo loadouts and energy settings. Flame pulled the heavy breaching kit from her back and placed it on a table. She pulled the two metal cylinders from the sides and threw them to two of her teammates. Then she hit the button to unfold the pack, and the most destructive tools of her trade were spread out before her. She picked a set of 5 shaped charges connected by a single detonator. When placed in contact with a surface, the devices would run a fast, high-powered scan to determine optimal placement, then move themselves into position using a combination of magnetics, suction, and tiny motors. It had never been tried on a Zhroshin vessel, but it had worked well in the past on AAN ships. Pandora's voice was startling when it broke the silence.
Gunnery Sergeant Murphy has engaged the enemy. Ship security is responding, sending most of the troops I can sense toward her position.
Go!
Saint ordered, and the marines flooded out of the room. Flame and Paris were in the lead, too wide in the corridor as they charged. Ahead they saw a set of 4 guards, the first pair about halfway down the hallway, and the others at the end. At the sight of them, the aliens froze, and sustained fire from marines eliminated 3. The 4th lived just long enough to struggle up to a control panel beside the door and trigger it before additional wounds took it down. With a wail of klaxons, a heavy shield door descended. Saint felt the wash of rockets as Paris flew past him in a prone slide across the floor. The metal rod he'd taken from Flame extended outward like a marathoner's baton. He slammed into the wall with a giant thud and a grunt of pain.
Ow!
The downed marine said as he rolled onto his back, his forward arm flopping over from the torque of his maneuver. Beyond him, keeping the heavy door from reaching the floor, was the cylinder wedged beneath it.
Great work, Paris. Now quit whining and let's finish this.
It took the team another couple of minutes to get the 2nd jack wedged underneath the bulkhead. They tied them both into their suit motors. Paris, whose charge had mangled several servos in his right arm of his armor, sat on the floor, attached to one. The other cylinder was attached to Alvi, who would provide overwatch and rear guard.
In 3,
Saint checked to make sure everyone was in position.
3, 2, 1, go!
The suit motors engaged, and the security door was pushed steadily upward, despite its own motors straining in the opposite direction. Flame scuttled into the gap and wired the lower half of the bulkhead door beyond with the shaped charges. They did their magic and repositioned into a strange asymmetrical star.
Fire in the hole! She yelled,
and the explosives detonated in a shower of smoke and debris that flew into the room beyond. Thief dove through the low opening, and Saint followed. The bridge was filled with technicians and security officers. The technicians, who hadn't been shredded by the incoming shrapnel, fell to the floor to join the wounded, while the security forces fired at the marines as they came. Saint popped up before the opening and triggered his shield to cover the rest of his team as they entered. Then he slid behind a barrier and swung his rifle up to take a shot. However, only one alien was still standing. Somehow, the being conveyed regal command despite the situation. Saint stood, brushed himself off, and walked to stand before him.
You're the captain, I presume?
I am.
I call upon you to surrender your ship.
The bird laughed at him, and his wings fluttered in a way that conveyed mockery.
Human, do you not think we've prepared for this eventuality, just as we have for all the others your limited minds could come up with?
He gestured at a display where a countdown clock appeared.
The ship will sail.